I want you to picture something for a second. It's actually a terrifying image if you really stop to think about it.
Oh yeah, it really is.
Imagine a piece of metal, like a shaft for a jet engine, or maybe a massive hydraulic rod, and it's spinning at this just incredible speed.
Right, it's practically blurring, just humming with energy.
Humming with energy, exactly.
Yeah.
Now I want you to imagine that this piece of metal needs to be so perfectly round, I mean, so impossibly smooth, that even a microscopic bump,
Something you couldn't even see with the naked eye.
yeah, something totally invisible. If that bump is there, it could cause the whole machine to vibrate, overheat, and eventually just fail catastrophically.
It's a high stakes scenario, you know? In this world, we really aren't talking about close enough. We're talking about absolute perfection.
Absolute perfection. And that is exactly where today's topic comes in. We are doing a deep dive into what I call the unsung hero of precision engineering, the OD grinder.
OD standing for outside diameter.
Right. Outside diameter grinder. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. You hear the word grinder, and you immediately think of sparks flying in a dirty garage, or maybe some guy sharpening a lawnmower blade.
Which is a totally fair assumption.
But as we're going to find out from our source material today, which is this incredible technical guide titled The Essentials of Precision OD Grinding Operations,
Great guide.
really detailed,
Yeah.
but it shows us that this is a completely different universe from sharpening a lawnmower blade.
It really is. I mean, that's the difference between using a sledgehammer and a scalpel. Actually, you know what? Even a scalpel might be way too crude of a comparison here. We are operating on a level that borders on the invisible.
So our mission today for this deep dive is to really understand how we shave off these microscopic layers of metal to achieve tolerances that are frankly mind-boggling. We're going to look at the machine itself, the physics of the grind, and the surprisingly human element required to make it all work.
Let's dive in.
Okay, first things first, let's define the beast. The source defines an OD grinder pretty simply. It's a machine designed to remove material from the external surface of a rotating workpiece.
Simple enough definition on paper.
Right, simple enough. But here's my question, and I think a lot of people listening might wonder this too. If you need to make a round metal part, why not just use a lathe?
The classic turning machine.
Yeah, I mean, lathes spin things, they cut metal, they've been around forever. Why do we need this whole other incredibly expensive machine?
That is the fundamental question, really. And to answer it, we have to look at the limitations of turning, which is the specific process a lathe performs. Don't get me wrong, lathes are fantastic
They're
tools.
everywhere.
They're the absolute workhorses of the shop floor. If you need to remove a whole lot of bulk material quickly, like taking a raw block of steel and making it look roughly like a cylinder, a lathe is your best friend.
So the lathe is basically like a sculptor just hacking away the big chunks of marble.
Exactly. But lathes run into major issues when you start chasing extreme precision. First off, there's a physical phenomenon called tool deflection.
Deflection. That sounds like bending.
It is bending. Think about it. On a lathe, you are taking a sharp stationary cutting tool and literally jamming it into a spinning metal part to peel off a thick chip.
That takes a lot of force.
A tremendous amount of force. And Newton's laws apply right. When the tool pushes hard against the metal part pushes back. That creates a tiny, tiny bit of bending or flexing in the part itself.
Which implies that your perfectly straight line isn't perfectly straight anymore.
Correct. Even if it bends by a fraction of a hair, it's no longer perfect geometry. Then you have the second big issue, which is hardness.
Right, the materials.
Yeah, a lot of the parts we are talking about today, things like aerospace shafts or bearing journals, they are made of hardened steel carbide or specialty super alloys. They are incredibly tough materials.
Because they have to survive inside a jet engine.
Exactly. But if you try to attack hardened steel with a standard cutting tool on a lathe, the tool's usually going to lose that battle. It might break, it might chip, or you'll just end up with a terrible rough finish.
So the grinder is essentially the answer to the too hard and too precise problem.
Precisely. The source material highlights this concept they call the precision gap. You bring in the OD grinder when your tolerances fall within plus or minus 0.000001 inches.
Wait, hold on. Let's pause on that number for a second. Plus or minus 0.001 inches.
10,000ths of an inch, yeah.
That is just incredibly small.
It's really hard for the human brain to visualize. So think of a standard human hair. A human hair is roughly 3,000ths of an inch thick. We are talking about a dimensional tolerance that is 1/30th the width of a single human hair.
Wow. Okay, so literally, if you sneeze, you mess it up.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And it's not just about the size of the part, it's about the smoothness. We're talking about surface finishes of 16 micro and draw, or even finer. A standard lathe generally just can't touch that consistently.
Because it leaves those little spiral ridges from the cutting tool, right?
Exactly, those feed lines. But a grinder leaves a literal mirror finish.
Okay, so how does the grinder actually pull that off? If the lathe uses a sharp tool to peel off a continuous chip, what is the grinder doing that's so fundamentally different?
It's using a rotating abrasive wheel. Imagine a wheel made of thousands and thousands of tiny sharp grains, basically like a very highly engineered, sophisticated rock.
Okay, sophisticated rock.
Yeah, and instead of peeling off a big continuous chip of metal like a lathe, does the grinding wheel essentially erodes the material. It removes microscopic layers all at once.
This is dusting the metal off rather than slicing it.
In a way, yes. And because it's taking off such incredibly tiny amounts with each pass, it doesn't have to push nearly as hard against the part. The overall cutting forces are much lower.
Which completely solves the deflection problem we talked about.
Exactly. Less pressure means less bending, which means you get much, much higher accuracy. It's a very gentle but very powerful process. You have the grinding wheel head holding the work head spinning the part itself, and the tailstock holding it steady on the other end.
Like a symphony of rotation.
I love that image. A symphony of rotation. That's exactly what it is.
So we know what it is and we know why we need it over a lathe. But who is actually using this technology? Is this just for making fancy Swiss watches?
Oh no, it's way bigger than that. The source specifically lists the heavy hitters of modern industry. We are talking aerospace, automotive, oil and gas defense, and power generation.
That covers basically everything that moves or generates power in our entire society.
Pretty much. Think about the specific parts involved here. Shaft spindles, huge hydraulic rods, aerospace landing gear elements.
Landing gear is actually a really great example to ground this for us, I think. Why does a landing gear part specifically need to be that accurate?
Think about the main hydraulic cylinder in a massive passenger plane's landing gear. It has to extend and retract perfectly thousands of times under immense physical pressure and extreme temperature changes.
Right, going from the freezing upper atmosphere to a hot runway.
Exactly. And if that rod isn't perfectly round, and I mean perfectly round, the hydraulic seal won't hold.
And if the seal doesn't hold.
You lose hydraulic pressure, the gear might fail to deploy, or it could just collapse on landing.
Wow.
Or consider a normal car engine. The camshafts and crankshafts, if those aren't ground to perfect concentricity, you get vibration.
And vibration is the ultimate killer, right?
Vibration is the absolute enemy of mechanical longevity. A minor deviation in roundness leads to premature wear. It's not just an annoyance for the driver, it's destructive kinetic energy.
So it shakes itself apart.
Right. If your crankshaft vibrates internally, your engine dies at 50,000 miles instead of 200,000. Or in a massive power plant turbine, a vibration could literally shake the whole building apart.
So what here is huge, it's all about safety, reliability, and service life. It's really not just about making the metal look shiny for a sales brochure.
No, the shine, that mirror finish we mentioned, that is just a byproduct of the strict engineering requirement. We need the surface to be that perfectly smooth so it doesn't act like a microscopic file just chewing up and destroying the rubber seals or the bearings it touches.
It's amazing how much of our modern world secretly relies on things being perfectly round. It's one of those invisible foundations of technology that you just never think about.
Absolutely. And achieving that level of roundness is a lot more scientific than people realize. Which actually brings us to the science of the grind section of our deep dive.
Yes, the source mentions that these machines are, quote, fussy. You can't just set it and forget it like a kitchen toaster.
No, you certainly cannot. It is a highly dynamic process. There are three big variables you have to juggle constantly: the condition of the wheel, the heat, and the vibration.
Let's start with the wheel. You mentioned it's an abrasive rock, basically. Does it get dull?
It does. It's a consumable item. Those tiny grains eventually wear down and get blunt, or the microscopic spaces between the grains get clogged up with tiny bits of metal.
Oh, like sandpaper getting gunked up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In grinding, that's called glazing or loading. And when that happens, the wheel starts rubbing instead of cutting.
And rubbing creates friction.
And friction creates heat.
Okay, so what do? Do you just throw this expensive wheel away?
No.
You dress it.
Dress it. That sounds very polite.
It's actually quite a violent process.
Yeah.
Dressing the wheel means using a specialized diamond tool literally an industrial diamond point, to skim the surface of the spinning grinding wheel.
Just ripping the top layer off?
Yeah. It tears away the dull grains and the loaded metal and exposes the fresh, sharp grains underneath. It also perfectly restores the geometric shape of the wheel.
So it's kind of like sharpening a pencil, but you're fracturing a spinning rock with a diamond to do it.
That's a really good analogy. Uh-huh. And if you don't dress the wheel frequently enough, your surface finish immediately looks terrible and your part temperatures will just spike. Speaking of temperatures, the source material really hammers home this issue of thermal management. This was honestly a huge aha moment for me when I read it.
It is so critical. You have to remember your basic high school physics, right? Metal expands when it gets hot.
Right. The molecules get excited, they push apart, and the object physically grows.
Exactly. So grinding creates friction. Friction creates heat. If the part you were grinding heats up too much, it expands physically. It gets slightly bigger inside the machine.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Now imagine you grind that hot, expanded part until your incredibly precise laser measurement system says it is absolutely perfect.
The machine thinks it's done. It hit the number.
Right. You turn the machine off, you take the part out, and the part cools down.
And it shrinks.
It shrinks back down.
Now it's too small.
Now it's completely undersized. It's scrap. You've just ruined a $10,000 aerospace component because you were chasing a ghost. You were chasing a physical dimension that only existed while the part was hot.
That is wild. You're literally fighting the physics of the metal itself.
That's why these high-end grinders have such complex liquid coolant systems and temperature stabilization routines. They have to keep the entire process thermally stable so that the measurements are true to room temperature.
You are practically trying to control the weather inside the machine.
You really are. And then on top of the weather, you have vibration, right?
Yes. The source talks a lot about chatter.
Even a tiny machine imbalance. Maybe the concrete floor of the factory isn't perfectly steady, or a single motor on the machine is slightly off balance. That can create harmonic patterns.
Harmonic patterns. Like sound waves?
Exactly like sound waves. But frozen in metal, you'll actually see a visible wave pattern on the surface of the part.
And that's bad.
Very bad. If you're making a bearing surface, those microscopic ripples will destroy the protective oil film, and the bearing will fail in no time at all.
Well. Okay, before we move on to the different types of grinding, the source briefly mentions ID grinding. I assume that's just the opposite of OD.
Correct. ID is inside diameter. So think of the inside of a tube or a cylinder bore.
Is it basically the exact same process just happening inside?
It's a similar principle, but a much, much harder execution. With OD grinding, you have the whole outside of the machine and the open air to work with. With ID grinding, you have to fit the entire wheel and spindle inside the hole.
Ah, so you're super cramped.
You're incredibly cramped. The wheel has to be much smaller, which means it has to spin way faster to get the same surface speed, and it wears out much faster. And it's notoriously hard to get the coolant fluid in there to flush out the heat and the metal chips.
It sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
It's a much trickier beast, but it's just as necessary for things like engine blocks.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about how the wheel actually meets the metal. The outline breaks down a few different techniques. We have Trevor's plunge and centerless. Can we just walk through these? I really want to visualize them.
Sure. Think of Trevor's grinding kind of like peeling an apple in one long continuous strip.
Okay.
The abrasive wheel spins and the table moves the part side to side longitudinally right across the face of the wheel.
So that's good for really long things like those turbine shafts we mentioned.
Exactly. If you need a perfectly uniform finish across a long continuous cylinder, you traverse. Now next is plunge grinding. This is exactly what it sounds like.
It plunges in.
Right? The wheel doesn't move side to side at all. It just dives straight in like a rubber stamp pressing down.
Why would you choose to do that instead of traversing?
It's great if the part has shoulders or deep grooves, or if the specific surface you need to grind is actually shorter than the total width of your grinding wheel. It's very, very fast because there's no lateral movement to wait for.
Makes sense. And then there's the one that frankly sounds a bit like magic. Centerless grinding. The source says the part just floats. How does that even work?
It is a bit like magic to watch. In normal grinding, you hold the part firmly between two centers, kind of like holding a cob of corn by the ends.
Right.
In centerless grinding, there are no centers. The part literally sits on a thin blade and is actively pinched between the big grinding wheel and a smaller rubbery wheel called a regulating wheel.
Wait, so it's just spinning freely between them? Doesn't fly out?
It doesn't fly out because the regulating wheel continuously controls the speed and the rotation. This method is incredibly fast because the operator doesn't have to stop the machine to unclamp and clamp each individual part. You can literally just feed parts through the machine, one right after another, in a continuous stream.
Oh, so that's for massive high-volume runs.
Yes. If you're making 10,000 small metal pins or bearing rollers, you definitely use centerless. It's the mass production king of the grinding world.
And finally, the source mentions CNC as well.
Computer numerical control. This is the modern standard for most complex parts.
Right, so instead of a guy cranking metal hand wheels, a computer controls the movement.
Exactly. It allows for complex multi-diameter grinding, so doing three or four different sizes on the exact same part in one single setup. And naturally, it drastically reduces human error.
Which brings us to a really interesting point about buying these machines. If a factory manager is shopping for one, what are they actually looking for? It can't just be about the software.
No, it heavily depends on what they're manufacturing. But the source lists a few critical physical specs. First is swing diameter, which is literally just how big of a round part can fit in the machine, and distance between centers, which is how long the part can be.
That makes total sense. Just basic sizing capacities.
Right. But then you get into spindle power. This dictates how fast you can aggressively remove material without stalling the motor or burning the part. And referring back to our earlier point, thermal stability.
The weather control.
Right. If you are buying a machine for true high-precision aerospace work, you are paying a massive premium for its ability to not change physical shape when the factory gets warm in the afternoon. You want a massive, heavy, rigid cast iron base.
It's an investment in consistency.
Exactly. Consistency is everything.
Now, here is where the deep dive gets really interesting for me. We have all this incredible technology. We have these computerized machines, laser measurements, internal thermal controls. But the source material makes a really huge point about the human element. It seems like you still can't just press a green button and walk away to get a coffee.
No, you really can't. And that's sort of the great paradox of precision manufacturing. The better and more complex the machines get, the more highly skilled the operator needs to be just to get the most out of them. It is very much still a craft.
What are the risks, though? Like, what actually happens if the human gets it wrong?
The absolute biggest risk is grinding burn. We touched on friction and heat earlier, but burn is when the localized heat at the point of contact gets so intense, it actually changes the fundamental metallurgy of the steel.
It changes the structure of the metal, like chemically.
Yes, it alters the grain structure. It can make the surface layer incredibly brittle. And the really scary part is sometimes you can't even see it with the naked eye.
Wait, really?
Yeah, the part might look shiny and completely perfect. It measures perfect. But you put it under a heavy load, like in that airplane landing gear we talked about, and it shatters or cracks because the metal structure underneath the shine has been totally compromised.
That is terrifying. It's invisible damage.
Exactly. Another common risk is simply undersized diameters. In most machining, like on a lathe, if you cut an internal hole too small, you can just go back and make it a little bigger.
Right, you just cut more.
But in OD grinding, you are removing material from the outside. If you grind even 1/10,000th of an inch too much off,
you can't put the metal back on.
It's done. It's a scrap part.
Mm.
And when you are grinding a highly complex aerospace alloy that already has 50 hours of machining time into it and costs thousands of dollars just for the raw material, that is a very career-limiting mistake.
So the operator needs to really know what they're doing. The source explicitly mentions that a good operator needs to, quote, listen to the machine.
They do. A truly skilled grinder uses all of their senses. They can actually hear the acoustic difference between a sharp grinding wheel and a dull one.
Just by the sound of the hum.
Just by the pitch of the cut. They can hear the load on the spindle motor. They understand the dressing intervals intuitively without having to look at a chart. It's a highly sensory job as much as it is a mathematical technical one.
But here is the major problem, right? The source highlights what they call a labor gap.
It's a huge problem right now. It is becoming incredibly difficult to find people with this specific nuanced skill set. The actual art of grinding is slowly fading as the older generation of machinists retires.
They're taking all that intuition with them.
Exactly. Facilities are struggling badly to recruit young people who can hold these tight tolerances consistently.
And this is where the source brings up a very specific solution in the industry. RSS Inc., or Regional Supplemental Services, Who are they exactly?
They are listed as a major strategic partner in the text. Essentially, they are a company bridging that massive labor gap. They aren't just a generic temp agency that sends over random bodies to sweep the floor. They specialize strictly in industrial staffing dynamics.
So they actively find the rare people who actually know how to run a CNC OD grinder.
Exactly. They connect high-end manufacturers directly with qualified vetted machinists and precision grinders. They handle the complex logistics of scaling.
Meaning if a factory gets a big order, they can ramp up.
Right. So if a factory suddenly lands a massive 5-year contract for aerospace shafts, they don't have to turn that lucrative work down simply because they lack the local talent. RSS helps them scale up rapidly with people who are already trained.
That's a pretty crucial piece of the puzzle then. Because you can have the shiny new million-dollar machine,
right,
but if you don't have the person standing in front of it who knows how to correctly dress the wheel and listen to the hum, the machine is effectively useless.
It's just an expensive paperweight. Reliable, qualified staffing becomes a primary strategic asset for these companies. It ensures those million-dollar machines don't just sit idle.
So in this one deep dive, we've really gone from the microscopic interaction of an abrasive grain hitting steel all the way up to the global supply chain and the macro labor market.
It's all deeply connected. The fundamental physics of the grind directly dictates the economics of the entire factory.
Let's quickly recap what we've learned today. OD grinding is the essential bridge between a rough, raw shape and a functional, highly safe component. It's what takes a raw piece of metal and gives it the exact precision needed to spin at thousands of RPMs without destroying itself.
It's the ultimate process that handles the impossible tolerances. It routinely deals with the hardest materials and the tightest specs known to engineering.
And while we have CNC robots and complex thermal sensors, the actual art of the grind, you know, managing that heat, keeping that wheel perfectly sharp, avoiding the invisible burn, it is still very much alive.
It reminds us that advanced technology hasn't replaced true craftsmanship. It has just elevated the stakes of that craftsmanship.
That's a really great way to put it. Elevated the stakes.
And for everyone listening, I actually have a thought for you to take with you today.
Well, let's hear it.
We so often think about manufacturing strictly in terms of what is made.
Right.
We look at a sleek car or a massive plane and we only see the physical object that was created.
Or the final product.
But in the world of OD grinding, the true value actually comes from what is removed. The safety of your next flight or the efficiency of your car engine. It all exists in the negative space.
The negative space.
Yeah, those microscopic layers of metal that just aren't there anymore. Because a highly skilled technician whose name you will never know ensured they were removed absolutely perfectly.
The invisible labor of the negative space.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. Next time I'm on a plane, I'm definitely going to be thinking about those hydraulic rods in the landing gear and the specific people who ground them.
It definitely gives you a brand new appreciation for a smooth landing, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Thank you for guiding us through this incredibly complex topic. And thank you to everyone listening to this deep dive into the fascinating world of OD grinding. Stay curious, look a little closer at the engineered world around you, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye, everyone.